Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Now that the warmer weather has arrived, many of us are itching to start working on a number of home improvement projects. Whether you're just starting, finishing, or maybe you're stuck at the point of no return on your DIY project, this is the show for you. We have licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy here to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management, and joins us to offer you his expertise. Always a popular show when Darren Tracy is here, so call early, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today, and we welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects. He is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question for Darren Tracy, give us a call now. 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Ray.
Oh, nice out there now.
It's a glorious day.
Time to get the hammer out and go smash something. That's my motto. I'm not too good with all that stuff, but I like to think about it once in a while. What's new with you?
Busy with this, nice weather breaking.
Yeah.
You were asking me if it's a busy time of the year, or Jim was asking me, and it's always busy, but particularly this time of year.
Well, you worked right through the winter on that project up north of here.
We did, and we're still working on that. We're almost done. We are installing trim, cabinets. It's been a lot of fun, but I'm ready for it to be done.
Well, for those who haven't followed this project on social media, just give us a quick explanation about what it is.
Okay, this is an 1870s building that was condemned in the city of Glens Falls.
Right.
The city had solicited bids to tear the building down, and the bids came in ranging from $20,000 to $70,000.
Right.
And I caught wind of this project at the 11th hour from a historical preservation society called Adirondack Architectural Heritage. I looked at the building a couple of times, and it was in dire straits. The roof had caved into the second floor, which had caved into the first floor, which had caved into the basement.
Oh, boy.
And the brick exterior had collapsed into part of the building. But there were a lot of nice details, and the basement foundation was in really good condition.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a pitch to the city to take it off their hands. So I bought it for $1 from the city with a plan to rehab it, and we have been rehabbing that for the past longer than what I want to say on air. It is on the National Register of Historic Places. We're going to take advantage of a state tax credit, which will help defray some of the costs. And I've been documenting some of the procedures that we've taken. And in fact, today I uploaded a little segment on how to keep the basement dry. I know a lot of the calls that we receive in the past have asked, what can I do about my wet basement?
Yeah.
So I put up a little segment on my Facebook page. And if you Google West Branch Engineering on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, you can find out some detail about how to take care or minimize the water impact on the basement. I'll give you my email address.
Sure.
If you're not on Facebook, you can contact me by email, darren@westbranchinc.com, and I can help you with that problem or any other problem as long as it doesn't take up a tremendous amount of time. I volunteer that.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Speaking of volunteers, I'd just like to plug an organization to which I belong, the Capital District chapter of Society of New York State Professional Engineers.
Right.
And we raise money for high school seniors who are interested in going in the engineering field. We give out several thousand dollars worth of scholarships each year. And we're also starting the beginning stages of a mentor program where if high school seniors or juniors are interested in engineering but not quite sure about what it entails, they can contact us
nice.
And possibly shadow us for a certain period of time or get some input. And I think that's really helpful to high school seniors. And lastly, if you're not interested in college at this time, engineering, I would suggest to pick up a trade. There are jobs out there to work with your hands, which ties right into this program.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. Jump onto the phones and Tom in Cobleskill. Tom.
Yeah, Ray, thank you for the terrific job you do at WAMC, Ray.
Thank
Always
you.
A pleasure to hear you. And Darren, I have kind of a two-part question for you. I'm hoping you could give me some guidance. I'm wanting to turn a screened-in porch that has to have the storm windows put on every year, and they look like hell, and I want to basically tear out the frame and pour, I think I want to pour a foundation and actually put a floor in and, you know, put in permanent windows. So my question is, it's actually a two-part question. I'm wondering, do you think that it would make sense for me to, I'm going to hand dig this trench out, and I want to know how deep I should go and how wide I should make the footer, or if you thought maybe it'd be better to do sonotubes or something like that instead. And then the second part is about dig safe, and I'll let you answer the first part first, I guess.
Okay, you by code, if your addition is attached to your home, not a freestanding deck, it's got to be, the footing has to be down below frost line, which is typically 4 feet in this area.
So, 4 feet, okay.
So it could be a continuous foundation, or it can be
right.
sonotubes, which are individual piers. Either way. You also have the option of building an Alaskan slab, which is slab on grade as it's built to a particular code, and that's a thickened haunch on the outside. The slab is thicker on the outside, has reinforcement and rigid insulation. So that's another foundation option.
And is that something that I can could do the, I mean, would I have to, if I did the Alaskan slab, I've heard somebody else told me about this. That doesn't have to be 4 feet on the sides, does it?
No, it's typically 18 inches thick from the top of the slab to the bottom of the thickened portion, which I call a haunch. In the industry, it's called a haunch. And
okay.
That's with 12 inches below grade. So what was your question about dig safe?
So I called Dig Safe, and they've come here. I've had work done at the house that I haven't done. I actually had a guy here doing some drainage work, an excavator and everything. And it's NYSEG. The gas comes in on that side. The underground electric comes in on that side. And they marked it all out. This was no more than 5 years ago, maybe six. I don't think it was that long. I can't remember exactly. But this time, NYSEG came out, and they marked, I know where their line is, but they marked it. But National Grid said, you know, they said that I was clear, nothing within 15 feet, which I absolutely know is not true. So I called them and they said, sorry, we only go to the property line. Now, they've come here before. National Grid has marked out right to the foundation of the house before. But now they're telling me, nope, we don't do that. You're on your own. And frankly, I'm going to hand dig this, and I would prefer not to be electrocuted.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Tom.
Typically, they go to your meter.
The meter is right there. I mean, it's on that side of the house. They've done it before, but the word from National Grid is, nope, we don't do that. We go to the property line, and too bad. Seems like it defeats the purpose of Dig New York.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Dig Safe is an organization that utility companies have sponsored in order to minimize the impact of damaging underground utilities such as natural gas or electric. And it's a service that does not cost anything. I think if you dial 811, not 911, but 811,
yeah.
That's Dig Safe. Mm-hmm. And anytime you're digging
right.
on your on any property, you should contact that number, even if it's something that you're putting in a garden or fence posts, something that you wouldn't think would be too detrimental to an underground utility. It's that service, and it should be utilized. But I'm surprised that they didn't help you out. Typically, the guys or gals that are out there marking these utilities would be pretty helpful, particularly if you catch them when they're there. So just be careful.
Okay. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. How deep typically is the average underground electric line in a residential neighborhood?
18 inches to 24 inches. Yeah, it's 18 inches if it's in a conduit and 24 inches if it's a direct bury.
That's very shallow.
Yeah.
I mean,
unless you're digging it.
If you, but if you're digging a garden, it's right, possible right, you go down that far. Wow, right. That is really something. Darren Tracy is our guest. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And this email came in from Julia. And the subject heading, home improvement. Concerning a Title V septic inspection in Williamstown, a builder built a small deck last year with beautiful hardwood, and it comes fairly close to the head of the septic tank. I expressed my concern that it might be too close to access the whole tank. It's about 5 feet from the top, so no problem getting it to pump. The builder, getting at it to pump it. The builder assured me that this was fine. But do you think I'll have a problem with the Title V inspection in terms of access? What's the Title V inspection, Darren Tracy?
I have to plead ignorance on that. I do not know what that is. That's in Massachusetts and I'm not familiar with that, but I can conjecture that it shouldn't be a problem with a deck being close to the septic tank as long as the portals are accessible in the tank for pumping and inspection.
Okay.
As long as it's your own deck and not somebody else's deck.
As far as the local or state ordinances, you are not familiar, but as a general practical matter, it seems like it might be okay.
It would seem in New York it would be okay as long as it's your own deck and as long as inspection manhole portals are accessible so the tank can be readily pumped.
All right. Well, Julia, thank you for that email. The number here is 800-348-2551. Teresa is calling from somewhere. It doesn't say. Where are you calling from, Teresa?
Hi. Calling from Greenville, New York.
Hi. Well, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, nice. Thank you guys for both being there. I have just a couple very quick questions. The first is we have a Lindell Cedar home. It's a really tiny little home. But the woodpeckers have had their way with the fascia on the house, so they've pecked clean through there. And so we're getting conflicting reports. One is replace the fascia. The other the painter just says, well, just fill the holes and call it a day. So that's my first question. And then secondly, we're looking at moving, and we found a beautiful house that was built about 12 years ago. The tenants that were in the house, there were some issues with them, and particularly with pet staining on the floors. It's pretty rough on the inside, but the frame is really strong. Long story short, we definitely know that the floors have to be replaced, the hardwood floors and the downstairs. But there's upstairs where there's the same damage, pet stains and smell everywhere, cats, dogs. We ripped up a rug and the subfloor has the stains on it. We had somebody come in and look and they said they could put a barrier down, but I'm not sure what's best for the health of the house. Does the subfloor come up as well, or do we put this barrier down and then put the flooring on top of that?
Okay.
Woodpecker first. As long as the fascia is not damaged too badly, you could patch the holes. And I've had that problem myself personally, and I just have been diligent about deterring the woodpecker from doing his business on the fascia.
And how do you do that?
Just get out there and scare them away.
Okay.
You can possibly put like an owl out there or another type of predator.
They don't generally work, those owls, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the neighbors are like, oh, there's Darren outside again yelling at the woodpeckers.
Adopting a cat, which are tough on birds.
Yeah.
But so and then regarding pet stains on floors, I've had quite a bit of experience with that. In some cases, I've had to rip the subfloor out of our house. In fact, out of our home, I had to rip the subfloor out because we have stray cats show up at our house occasionally and soft hearts, and we adopt them. And had them spayed, and typically they don't number one in the house, but occasionally they will. And in one circumstance, it was like really, really terrible. And we tried everything, replacing the carpet and coating the floor. And I ended up removing the subfloor and putting in new subfloor. So that was that case. However, in another, I went to that degree because it's my own home, but another.
Because that's another show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we're considering this to be our own home. And so the folks that we're looking to purchase this from, that's going to factor into the offer that we give them, because I'm not necessarily comfortable with the level of smell that's in the house. But I wasn't sure whether that barrier versus the pulling up the subfloor, those were two suggestions from our construction person, but I'm not sure which one would be the best. To me, I'd like those subfloors gone. But if the barrier does its job, then is that okay for the health of the house?
Well, replacing a subfloor is a lot of work, and when I tackle a problem, I typically like to go about the easiest solution first. So you could try to seal the floor with a product. I'm not endorsing this particular product, but there's a product called Bin out there, and that tends to work well, and I've used that in several really, for lack of a better word, homes that smell pretty badly due to too many animals.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And I've used that with pretty good success, and sometimes I've used two or three layers coats, and I put it on the subfloor, and I get it right around the perimeter, and I mop it in. I pour the can right in there, so it gets all around the edge of the subfloor and on the base and the wall. We basically flood it.
Yeah.
Because if you just do the top, you still have some areas that are exposed on the edges that can permeate through. So I would try that first with a coating, and then just flood it and do a really thorough job of sealing the area. I've also put a layer of plastic down on top of that, poly, and then carpet on top of that.
Well, thank you for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today, and Stanley in Pub Hollow. Stanley.
Hello there.
Hello.
Can we be heard?
You can be heard.
All right. I have a problem that I caused myself. I have a platform that's in the center of my house that has planed 8x8 rafters. And I had to reinforce those rafters with some 3-inch steel. So I got up there and did all that work. But in the process of doing that, my bare hands were all over those planed rafters that are covered with Danish oil. And so left behind, when I casually look up there, are all my handprints.
Oh.
I'm wondering if there's some magic way of getting those handprints off there.
Hello, Stanley. I recognize your voice. This is a gentleman I know in Pub Hollow. I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
It's out in Washington County.
Hi, Darren.
And
hi, Darren.
Stanley lives in this great structure that he built.
Nice.
By himself and with some help from others, but it's a yurt. It's a wooden yurt with attachments, and it's an architectural specimen.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's a yurt?
Yurt is a Stanley, can you describe your yurt? You could probably do it better than me.
They basically they came from Mongolia. They're round tents. So that mine looked like I guess that's not true. They're just like a round tent.
Okay.
But mine are made out of regular construction material, all code and all that stuff.
Oh, neato. Hang on, Stanley. Before we get to the question about the handprints, why build a yurt?
That's a good question. And my answer usually is I started out building square and I ended up with all this.
All right, fair enough.
I've liked yurts since the Whole Earth catalog back in the 70s. There was an ad for yurts back there. And so I've been following them for years, and I decided finally in the early aughts to go ahead and do it.
Well,
I had no idea what I was doing.
That's very cool. All right, go ahead, Darren.
Stanley, do you have yurt images on the website that you'd be interested in sharing with the public?
Stanley McGee, no.
Okay.
They should be up soon. They were up, but my website got trashed.
Okay. All right. This is an astonishing architectural structure.
Well, you don't see many yurts around Pub Hollow.
It's Frank Lloyd Wrightish.
Cool.
Nice.
But then again, he's got the handprints, which kind of takes the value away.
I can't
away.
Help you on the handprints, Stan. I don't know. Just try some detergents. Zep is a detergent I've had good luck with. Simple Green. I can't help you too much on that.
More Danish oil?
More Danish oil. You could try more Danish oil, right?
More Danish oil? Okay.
You could try that.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, if someone's going to buy a yurt, they probably would want your handprints on there.
That's a matter of opinion, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, Stanley, thanks for the call. Good luck with the yurt. Over to Scott in New Lebanon. Scott, you're on.
Hey, so I got two questions. They're kind of vague, but hopefully you can help out. I have a really old house. It's dated back to 1720.
Wow.
It's totally livable, and we are very comfortable in it, but there are tons of things to do in it. And I'm actually, what's always been difficult for me is to figure out how to prioritize what comes first. And I'm wondering if you can suggest who you actually speak to, who you hire to kind of help you in that way, to kind of take you through, this is what you should do now, this is what you should do then, whether it's from working up from the inside up or the outside in, whatever.
Yeah.
My second question is, we have a barn, a great barn that we actually want to convert into a studio that has all the insides of a normal barn with a loft and everything. And it sits on four cement pillars. And I'm actually wondering, do you have to destroy the structure in order for that to kind of to be renovated, or can you build foundation without moving the barn and digging around it and that kind of thing?
Okay.
So those are two questions.
Okay, I'll take the second question first. You definitely can shore up that structure and put a foundation underneath. We've done that. We've moved homes. We jacked up homes. We moved one three-story Victorian home a third of a mile and put a new foundation underneath. It's definitely doable. You have to have the right contractor. If you want to contact me off the air, I can put you in touch with somebody. Regarding priorities, I can help you out with that generally right now. First is the roof. You keep the water out of the building. That's number one, and away from the basement. And you can go on my Facebook page, to which I alluded to earlier, regarding how to minimize the amount of water infiltration in your basement. Then damage to wood, water getting in the siding, windows, those are the priorities, and work your way from that to aesthetics, generally speaking.
That sounds good. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Hey, good luck with the house. It's a 300-year-old house. Wow. Number here is 800-348-2551, and we have Darren Tracy here with us today to answer your home repair, maintenance, and improvement questions. And let's go over to Rod in East Nassau. Rod.
Hey. I bought my house in 2011. The back of my house is about 60 yards from the Kinderhook Creek. And when they told me that I had a grandfathered in leach field, and that's all I had. And ever since then, I've told people there's no septic tank. And ever since then, I've told people that I've told that it's just a leach field, they said that would be impossible because my place would reek.
Hmm.
And there is a pipe. There is one pipe that's sticking up. I'd say it's about a diameter of about an inch and a half. And I've stuck a stick down there. There's liquid in it. I've stuck a stick down there. It doesn't have any foul smell, but there is an area that's a little mossy and spongy.
Hmm.
Is this a disaster?
It may not be a disaster, but really something that you should take a look at.
I don't think I have enough yardage from the creek to be able to. I guess I would have to get a variance from the town to put in a new septic tank.
Okay, in New York, I design septic systems. That's one of the things I do as a professional engineer. In New York State, if you modify, change anything more than a very minor repair, you need to hire a licensed engineer or architect to design the septic system. And they knew all the rules and regulations. I know it's an expense, but in the long run, it's really beneficial to you and the environment. Typically, a septic system will fail at the least opportune time.
Even a leach field?
Definitely.
How can a leach field fail, right?
But if with everybody telling me that this leach field if all I have is a leach field, why it's there is no foul smell, or is it just something that's eventually going to happen?
Well, I can address that. I don't know if you were being facetious, Ray, or not, but
I'm just still thinking about the yurt, frankly. No, go ahead.
Well, that's more interesting to look at the yurt, but the leach fields fail all the time, and typically they fail due to lack of maintenance in a septic tank. It doesn't get pumped often enough, and when a company pumps a septic tank, they will inspect a baffle. There's a baffle on the outlet of the septic tank. This is actually relatively important because I assume a lot of your listening audience are on rural septic systems. That tank should be pumped every 2 to 5 years, and the baffle on the outlet inspected. What happens, that baffle breaks and then the solids are allowed to flow out of the tank out into the leach field, and that's what kills a leach field. More times than not, that's the problem with the leach fields. And going back to the collar, definitely you can have a septic system without a septic tank, just a line running out, a leach line. Many years ago, that's what they had. They had pipes
Is that pretty much what I have?
It could very well be. You said you're 60 yards from the creek. It could have been a line that just ran down to the creek and just dumped into the creek, and that's why it wouldn't plug up. In the small town that I grew up in northern New York, a hamlet of a couple hundred people on the west branch of the St. Regis River, they all shot down into the river.
Yeah.
I say they all. Many shot down into the
river. So you didn't swim a lot in the summer down
there? We actually did.
Oh,
really? We actually did. And you know what? When the water is low, you could tell.
Yeah.
And, that has changed. People have started putting in residential wastewater treatment systems, and it's improved the environment. So that's why I suggest you look into that. And there is a regulation of being 100 feet away from a body of water, but if you can't get that distance, you are, in fact, grandfathered in because you're living there. You can do the best you can, and that's basically what the Department of Health says, the governing body. You do the best you can with what you have.
Right. And who says what's best?
The professional engineer that you hire.
I see.
Yeah. I mean, the state has regulations.
Right.
And the engineer or architect interprets those regulations to provide the best septic system for the
gotcha.
State.
Gotcha.
Do you think that the one small little piece of property that is spongy and moldy, do you think that's just connected to the leach field?
I do, and it's probably a makeshift septic tank. Probably something made out of concrete blocks or an old barrel or something. That's probably where your makeshift tank is, and then you have a leach line running out from there.
Okay.
About half of the treatment of the waste is treated in the tank and about half out in the leach field. In the tank, it's anaerobic digestion with no oxygen, then out in the field, it's aerobic
digestion. I don't think it's ever had a tank. I've never had a septic.
Good luck with it. You should do something with it, though.
Hey, Rod, good luck with that. Let's take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. We'll be back. I don't know, Darren Tracy. How do you feel about spiders? Giant tarantula-like spiders.
They don't bother me.
They don't bother you. Oh, good. Because one came down from the ceiling during Stanley's call, and he's lurking around here, Studio A, our own little private yurt here. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You're nice, spider. Come here. Come here.
I love to watch them construct their webs.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that an engineering thing?
Artistic engineering combined.
You know what I'm not fond of is the spider bites.
Yeah, so. I don't know that I've ever been bitten.
Oh, really? One. Okay. Well, he's right over there, Spidey. Okay. Mary in Woodstock, you're on.
Hi. I just put in a ramp. I have an old wood building, and the wasps and the hornets apparently the ramp covered all the areas that they were used to going into the house. But I can't, I can see the wasps, but I can't see their nests.
Oh.
Are there any non-toxic products that won't kill the bees that I could spray around the old boards, because they're all over the old boards also trying to find their way in? And I'm told they use peppermint spray and chrysanthemum spray, and there are a number of products that are not toxic.
Yes.
That is beyond my area of expertise. I do not know, but one thing I do know, and I learned within the past year, is that wasps in this geographic area do not overwinter in their nest. So if there is a nest there from last year, you don't have to worry about it for this year. Any type of wasp coming out of that, it's inactive.
Well,
they're all gone or dead.
I have a ton of wasps looking for ways to get in.
Yeah.
Between the old boards and and where the doors and windows, but I can't see where they are.
Maybe you know, Ray, you've had
the base of the house.
Well, there are different kinds of there are different kinds of wasps. I know that we get some every year. They look for little holes in the wood, and then they're gone very quickly. However, my wife and I have used, and we haven't done it in the last couple of years, we're going to do it again, this organic pest control place, and they spray, and it does smell like peppermint, and it really does work.
Well, how about, have you heard of the chrysanthemum spray?
Well, my sense of smell is not all that keen, so maybe they did. I'm not sure.
Do you have the name of a product I could buy at the hardware store?
That I do not have, Mary, but I'm sure if you went in and asked, they would probably point you to someplace.
Well,
although be careful if you're spraying the wasps, you know? You don't want to be stung a billion times doing that.
No, you can only spray after dusk.
Yeah.
When they're in wherever there are.
Yeah.
And you can only spray before the sun is up.
Okay.
That's when they are sleeping.
Yes.
But this woman claimed there was a powder that Adams, Fairacre Farms, claimed you can only get rid of them with a powder.
I
said, if you can't find where they're going in and out, a powder won't work.
Yeah, well,
she claimed all the products that say that they are non-toxic and safe.
Yeah.
she claimed they all could kill bees plants.
Well, you know, Mary, we're not experts on that one, but I would say that if you do call a professional, they'll probably know where to look. And good luck and be safe. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest, sir.
I like delegating some questions to you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to make a habit out of this.
That's your one for the show. Now it's back to you and Donna in Poughkeepsie. Donna, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a question about smoke. I'm not a smoker, but I'm interested in buying a home that there's been a smoker living in there for, at least 30 years. So I just wondered do you have to, how much do you have to rip out to really get rid of the smoke smell?
How much do you really have to rip out to get rid of 30 years of smoking?
I don't know that you have to rip anything out, Don. It's similar to the...
Good answer.
It's not that you get away scot-free without doing some work.
Right.
You have to seal up all the surfaces with a paint or a coating, maybe the bin product that I mentioned earlier for the pets. And you might have to go heavy or a couple of coats. But I have found out that works to seal out smoke.
Yeah.
And, every square inch, every surface area that you can think of.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it might
any
be...
fabrics, get rid of the fabrics, drapes, wash them really well, steam clean the carpet, or sometimes you have to get rid of the carpets.
I mean, it's probably easier just to take up smoking, right?
Oh, that's a good solution.
Yeah. Well, Donna.
Okay. No, that's good. I just was concerned about that because, I think you talked about been with another caller, so that could even be something we try first. And if that wasn't effective, then go, more in depth.
You'll be all right.
Two coats.
All right, Donna, good luck. Don't actually take up smoking. That was only said in jest. All you children getting home from school, never start. And Mark in Mayfield, you're next. Mark.
Hi, I always enjoy listening to you guys. And I know that you guys really enjoy a good crawl space question.
Ah, splendid.
So I have a crawl space that's it's about 10 feet by 25 feet. It's built over an old part of a garage, so it's cement, except for the last 3 by 10 feet, which kind of slopes down about 3 feet. There's dirt down there that the septic from the master bath goes out through. So what I did is I covered that with plastic, the dirt portion, and I insulated with fiberglass insulation the ceiling part of the crawl space. And I was just curious, is it worth getting some Tyvek and putting over the insulation?
Let me think about
Were you distracted by the siren that we heard in the background in Mark's house?
No, I was distracted by the internal siren in my head.
Okay, all right.
Thinking about a couple of different things.
That siren wasn't for me.
Okay, man, that's good. All right, now Darren will answer your question.
I'm a crawl space and septic system specialist, all the nasty places. I've been a lot of crawl spaces. Well, it's good that you put a vapor barrier on the bottom of the crawl space, or on the floor, and that isolates the earth from the space and keeps the moisture from wicking up. And what you need to do is not so much insulate the floor. I would insulate the perimeter of the crawl space and treat it like a
did that.
You did that. Okay, great.
We have a 2-inch foam.
Yeah. Then it's not going to hurt that you have that floor insulation. I would make sure that you have your perimeter sealed tightly. You could do that with spray foam or foam in a can or chalking insulation in tightly. And if you did that, you would not need the Tyvek on the bottom of your floor joist because the Tyvek just prevents the air from moving into the space. It's an air barrier, and the place to stop the air barrier is at the perimeter of the crawl space.
I mean, you know how fiberglass looks. It's kind of unsightly, so part of it was to cover it up, too.
Oh, you said you had fiberglass on the perimeter? Or just in between the floor joists?
Floor joists,
Well, you're in a crawl space, so the aesthetics doesn't really matter. But for function...
Mark spends a lot of time in the crawl space. You never know.
For function, maybe you want the Tyvek there for function to hold
the fiberglass in place. It has tendency to droop over time, especially if you get some mice and critters in there. So it would help in that regard. But as, in terms of the air barrier, you want your air barrier out on the perimeter.
Okay. Thanks an awful lot.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And Mike in East Bern. Mike.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a question. My wife and I bought a foreclosed house on a lake. We have 2.1 acres, so we're deciding, one, if we tear it down and rebuild, are we grandfathered in with the septic? It's an old cinder block septic. In the spring, water covers the leach field. I don't really want to. I want it to be safe because I'm swimming in the water. The other option we have is we own a ledge, and we're thinking of just rebuilding up on the ledge. That way we're way out of the water. So I'm just struggling with, we kind of want to make a decision based on what type of septic.
Yeah.
Are you as a professional engineer to design, like look, come to the site, look at it, and give us options, or send in the form with the $400 to the state and have them do that, or what's the best option to proceed there?
Okay, so yeah, that's a good question.
Okay. I'm not looking for more work.
Oh, no, just in general, someone like you.
Right. Yes, you'd have to hire a professional engineer or a licensed architect to design a new system. To my knowledge, there's not any trigger that requires you to construct a new septic system if the existing one is in place and working properly. So you may not need one. Now, if you want to improve your environment or you're concerned about being adjacent to the water and you want the best system possible, then yes, by all means, upgrade the system.
Okay. So. Mike, thanks a lot. It sounds like a great spot up there in Bern. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. Judy in Woodstock. Hello, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. Here's my question. I bought my house in Woodstock, 2010-ish, and I've been living in it. I'm the only person living in it. I've had no trouble with the septic at all. And once in a while, I put down that stuff, and I'm not remembering the name of it, but it can be a liquid or a powder, and you put it down your drains. Do I need to pump the septic tank?
As I said earlier in the program, it's advisable to pump the septic tank every 2 to 5 years, depending upon use. Since you're a single user, if you don't flush a bunch of oil from a kitchen into the septic tank, you could probably go on the longer end of that 5 years. But there's another advantage of pumping a tank is to inspect the baffle to make sure that the baffle is in place and functioning properly. Because if that breaks off, and they're known to do that in concrete tanks, so they'll break off and all the solids in the tank flow out into your leach field, it kills your leach field and you have to install a new septic system. So it's a simple item to maintain, the baffle. And it's vitally important to a properly functioning septic system. And
how do I find a dependable contractor?
Almost all the Google septic pumping.
Yeah.
The guys with the tanker trucks, then they're all over the place. And just make sure that they know that you want them to inspect the baffle on the outlet side.
So once they, I grew up, we never had a septic system. We were always on town lines. When they drain the septic tank, where does the stuff go?
They take them to municipal wastewater treatment plants.
Oh, okay.
So when they charge you your fee, there's a tipping fee that they have to pay to the municipality in order to dump that waste at the waste treatment plant.
Gotcha. All right. Helen in New Lebanon. Helen, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have an old house, almost 200 years old, I guess, and we've had it for about 27 years. And when we got the house, we knew that there was a gray water line from the kitchen area out to a field. There's a pipe that goes through the basement, and then it goes down in a drain and under the ground, and it goes out to where the land drops off, a little hill there, and it comes out there. And I guess they didn't have indoor plumbing in this house till the late 50s, I think. So I don't know, they kind of, how they put things together. But anyway, we've been having problems with this gray water line lately. It's been plugging up. And I don't know if people that borrowed our house this summer, used our house this summer, poured some stuff down there they shouldn't. But I've had a plumber come out, and he cleaned out the line, he said, to where it goes out of the house, and it was working fine. But then it's been very sluggish. So I'm afraid there's a problem in the gray water line in that underground pipe. And I thought, could we possibly hook this up to the septic so we don't have to go through this gray water line? Do you know if that's can be done?
Yes, that can be done, depending on what is entering your gray water line. Do you know what's tapped into it? Is it just your kitchen sink, or is there a water softener?
The kitchen sink and dishwasher. No, just the kitchen sink and dishwasher.
Yes, that could be hooked up to your septic line. Alternatively, you could find the end of the gray water pipe and check out that basin. That basin might be plugged up.
Yeah.
Replace that basin. That might be an option.
Yeah, we did at one time have it dug out and have gravel put in there because it was freezing, and we'd have to go out with a hairdryer and open it up.
Okay.
But I was afraid possibly there's a crack in the pipe over the years, and
it's more likely that crushed stone is filled with coagulated material from the dishwasher.
Ah.
Or some oils on your plates.
Yeah.
That tend to.
Yeah.
Clog up that stone, so you could replace that stone, and
okay.
that basin is probably not too
yeah.
big. No, you can by
is
code you can have a gray water system for the listeners that okay. we're running out of time
yeah,
here.
We
but I'll just quickly say gray water is
yeah.
wastewater from your house. It's not from the toilet,
right?
Right.
And you can dispose of that separately, and not into your septic
yes.
tank.
Okay.
But you can also okay. dispose of it in your septic
okay.
tank. One situation where a gray water is effective, you don't want it in your tank, is with water treatment systems like a water softener.
Why?
Because it can affect the microbial action of treating the waste. So they advise having that pumped out or directed out to a separate gray water basin.
All right, very quickly, Darren, we only have a minute or so here. Okay. Let's go to Nancy in Scotia. Nancy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I just had a brand new house built, and we have a three-season room off of the living room. Three walls are mostly windows, and we paid extra to have it insulated, and it's on a concrete slab. My question is, they did not put on the outside, underneath the siding, they did not put any Tyvek, like vapor water barrier or air and wind barrier, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And he said they don't do that for rooms that are not insulated or heated. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And so my husband and I have been debating, do we tear down the siding and put that Tyvek underneath the siding?
All right. We only have about 15 seconds here.
Okay.
Gordon.
It's probably a good idea to do that. Even if the space is unheated or three season, that functions as an air barrier, and it's good to keep the air out of the space. So pain in the butt to do that, but probably
yeah.
worthwhile.
All right. That is where we will have to leave it. Darren Tracy, how do people get in touch with you if they have a question?
Facebook, West Branch Engineering is becoming the most popular way to contact
me. And you can see the pictures of the little tiny project.
You can see the tiny house pictures and little tutorials or Darren@WestBranchInc.com for email.
All right, man. Well, thank you for being here. Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Michael's Appliance Center, Middletown. Wolf, Sub-Zero, Gen Air, Fisher-Paykel, and more. Sales, service, delivery, and extensive parts department. Nobody knows appliances like Michael's. MichaelsAppliance.com. Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting Still Life Like, an exhibit exploring the still life genre with a contemporary lens, open this Wednesday, reception Saturday 5 to 7, carriehaddadgallery.com. At Mother Earth Storehouse, Hudson Valley Natural Food Market and Vitamin Center, with locations in Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and Saugerties, serving the community since 1978, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here. Thank you for listening and for the great calls. Zach Malloy has been our engineer. Phones answered by Kayleen White. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we discuss student loan debt with experts from SUNY and M&T Bank. Stand by now for the book show.